Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
It's here, and so am I. Thanks, DC. You can call in right now, 888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. You can also email the program, Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com, or follow me on Twitter. Grab onto my Twitter handle, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. Or the show account at Cale Clark Show. And speaking of email, I got a great question that came across the email, the electronic mail service, and I'm going to share that with you in just a second. But I do want to give a shout out to Darwin from San Diego. Now, yesterday's show, we had so many callers yesterday that we unfortunately weren't able to get through them all. But I saw in the call screen Darwin from San Diego had an awesome question. He was concerned about his daughter's wedding. His daughter was planning on getting married outside the church, maybe on the beach in San Diego. I don't know. That's not cool. So he had some questions about this and how does he deal with this? So Darwin, if you're out there, if you're listening, please call in, but I'll try to answer your question anyways later on because it's a good one. But first, I got an email from a listener named Gary, a very faithful listener. And I'm not sure what station he's listening to the program on. It wasn't in his email, but he did say this. Hi, Cale. We love your program. I know we as Catholics don't believe in reincarnation, but I've read that it was simply removed from our belief system during the Council of Nicaea. Is that true? And what about those who refer to the new Adam as evidence? Okay. Gary, thank you for your question. That's now some people might say, what are you talking about, Gary? Believe it or not, this is a thing. Some people believe that the Catholic Church taught reincarnation prior to the Council of Nicaea. I'll tell you about that in just a second, where that idea comes from. But with respect to your second question, the new Adam. Now, in the New Testament, Jesus Christ is referred to as the second Adam or the new Adam by St. Paul because he succeeds in every way that the first Adam failed. So this does not mean that the original Adam was somehow reincarnated as Jesus. No. This is what is called typology, okay? God writes the world the way human beings write with words. If you're reading a mystery novel, perhaps Sherlock Holmes or Agatha Christie or something like that, there's this technique of foreshadowing that authors sometimes use. Well, when God writes the history of the world, just like a mystery writer might want to tip you off to something that's going to happen in the future. Who done it? It was the butler with a candlestick in the library. Whatever the case may be, God can do that with actual people, places, things, and events. So Jesus is a new Moses as well in the Gospel of Matthew. Just as Moses goes up the mountain, comes down with the old law, which is still the moral law is still in effect, by the way, the Ten Commandments. So he comes down with Ten Commandments while Jesus goes up the Mount of Beatitudes. And he has, guess what, 10 Beatitudes. Oh, I thought there were 8 Beatitudes. There's actually 10. I'm going to be doing a series in the future, in the very, very near future, on the Faith Explained on the Sermon on the Mount. I'll talk about that then, so I'll save that. Sorry to keep you hanging there, but don't have time to get into that. But there are lots of things like that in the Scriptures, and Jesus is the second Adam because he didn't give in. He fought against the dragon, the Satan. It wasn't a garden variety garden snake, by the way, wrapped around a tree like you see in some paintings. This was a fearsome dragon. In Hebrew, he's called the Nahash. He's mentioned several times in Scripture. And in the book of Revelation, the last book in the Bible, he is the great dragon, the ancient serpent who deceived the whole world. Now, that puts a whole new spin on his words to Adam and Eve. You know, eat the fruit and you will not die. In other words, if you don't eat it, I'll kill you. That's what Scott Hahn suggests. Maybe that's what really was going on. And Adam very cowardly refused to defend his bride, fight against the dragon. He wasn't doing his job. How did the dragon, how did the serpent get into the garden in the first place? Adam's job was to keep the garden, to guard the garden. Well, he fell asleep on the job. The serpent gets in, tempts Eve. She goes for it. Adam does too. He's no better. They start the blame game. God says, what happened? Where are you? What are you doing? He knows the answers to these questions. He's just trying to get them to make the first confession in human history. And Adam says, the woman that you gave me. In other words, it's her fault, but really it's your fault, God, because you set this whole thing up. She gave me the fruit, so I ate it. All right, so I'm absolved. No, you're not. No, not at all. And so this Jesus, in fact, succeeds in every way that Adam fails. He does enter into mortal combat with the serpent, not in the Garden of Eden, but at a different tree, the real tree of life, the cross, where he wins by losing. He wins by dying, by giving his life for his bride, the church. And so there's so many things we could say about that, but that doesn't mean that Jesus is Adam reincarnated. Not at all. But this is typology, because God always works the same way. God is the same. Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. That's what it says in the letter to the Hebrews. So God always does things in salvation history through the various covenants that he makes the same way. As Mark Twain once said, history may not always repeat itself, but boy, it sure does rhyme. It sure does rhyme. And that's certainly the case in God's economy. Well, what about this question of reincarnation? Is there such a thing as Catholic reincarnation? Did the Catholic Church ever teach this? That's what our listener Gary asked me today. And you're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, toll-free if you have a question as well. Well, let me try to answer this. Here's what the early church actually thought about this. Now, the reason why some people think that the church actually taught this, in recent times, this goes back to none other than the actress Shirley MacLaine. You remember her, right? She had some pretty strange views. She was part of the New Age movement, and this is what she said in a book that she wrote called Out on a Limb. She certainly was out on a limb, out to lunch as well, I would say, and she certainly is probably sawing off the very limb she's sitting on. But in her book, Out on a Limb, she said this, quote, "The theory of reincarnation is recorded in the Bible, but the proper interpretations were struck from the Bible during an ecumenical council meeting of the Catholic Church in Constantinople sometime around AD 553, which was called the Council of Nicaea," end of quote. Okay, so the eminent church historian Shirley MacLaine. Okay, she's a little bit confused about this, so she's been misinformed. Let's disabuse her and her followers of this notion. Well, first of all, she's conflating a whole bunch of things. There was no Council of Nicaea in AD 553, and the Council of Nicaea certainly didn't take place in Constantinople. Okay, by the way, a lot of people don't know this, but there are actually, we've heard of the Council of Nicaea. That's where the Nicene Creed comes from. We say it very often at Mass, but there was actually two Councils of Nicaea. A lot of people don't know this. There is one in, our friend Steve Weidenkopf, church historian, he would know this for sure. He's probably listening right now, but there's of course that council in AD 325, but there's another one. There's another one in 787 AD, but in neither one of those councils of Nicaea was reincarnation ever talked about. Now, Shirley MacLaine mentioned the year AD 553. Something did take place in Constantinople in AD 553, but it was actually the Second Ecumenical Council of Constantinople. But by the way, if you look at the records from that council, reincarnation didn't come up as a topic there either. In fact, none of the councils talked about it. And according to Catholic Answers, they did some research on this, that the closest that the Second Council of Constantinople came to talking about reincarnation, they didn't mention it, but they did condemn the writings of someone named Origen. Now, Origen was a very influential figure in the early church, and he did say some things that were a little bit off base, but not everything he said was bad. In fact, Pope Benedict XVI loves this guy, and he actually did a general audience talk about him when he was pope. And so you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater in this case. Origen actually has said some really cool stuff, but he wasn't canonized. He's not considered a saint. And that's probably because some of his teaching was, he might have been confused about some things himself. So Origen basically, this is why some people think that the early church did talk about reincarnation. It's because of Origen, because he actually thought that souls pre-existed in heaven before they came to earth. Whereas we would say that the human soul is created at the very moment of conception. God infuses the immortal soul. But he actually thought, and some others did too, that souls pre-existed in heaven before they would find bodies. So people in the New Age movement, they actually kind of think this is reincarnation. They confuse it with reincarnation, and they think that Origen believed in this. But actually, Origen himself, although he did believe in pre-existence of souls, he actually condemned the idea of reincarnation. He was actually one of the strongest guys against it. He thought that idea was nuts because people in the ancient world, as well as in the modern world, believed in reincarnation. So, by the way, where did Shirley MacLaine get this idea from? Well, it's in all likelihood something she got from another book that was quite popular in the 1970s, a book called Reincarnation in Christianity. And that was written by somebody named Geddes MacGregor. And this guy, in his book, he says that, well, Origen supports reincarnation, but his teachings on this were suppressed. But he has no evidence for what he says in the book, and he actually says that in the book. You know, hey, I'm convinced that Origen taught reincarnation. I have no evidence for this, but I'm going to say it anyways. Well, you sort of have to prove these things, okay? You can't just say, well, okay, I believe. Okay, well, I guess I should believe it too, just because you said that. Well, so many church fathers wrote against this concept of reincarnation, and this took place. All of this took place before the Council of Nicaea. Irenaeus, one of the great apologists of the early church, he wrote about this in his book Against the Heresies, or Against the False Teachings, and he wrote this in 189 AD in the second century, way before the Council of Nicaea. Tertullian said some really funny stuff. There's some great stuff in the Church Fathers. Carl Keating calls the Church Fathers the most dangerous men in Christianity because a lot of Protestants, when they look at the church, they want to kind of recapture the glory of the early church. And very often, there was a famous church outside of Chicago, in the suburbs of Chicago, a Protestant congregation called Willow Creek. Those of you in the Chicago area might have heard about this place. It's a mega church. Thousands of people used to go there. They had these really interesting contemporary worship services, yada, 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 tried to, you know, seek out the lost, spiritually indifferent people, try to bring them to Jesus. You might have heard about this place. Recently, it was in the news because their founding pastor, Bill Hybels, fell into a scandal, as so many have done. And that is obviously tainted his legacy. But anyways, the place is still out there in suburban Chicago. It's actually pretty close to the new offices of Relevant Radio in Lincolnshire. But anyways, just a fun factoid there. But one of the things that this guy Bill Hybels did when he started Willow Creek was he wanted to create what he called an Acts 2 community. So that comes from the Acts of the Apostles chapter 2, where it talks about the activities of the early church. They gathered together for the apostles' teaching, the prayers, the breaking of the bread. That's really interesting. That is actually a reference to the Eucharist. But at any rate, they tried to recapture the purity of the early church. And Carl King always used to say, and he founded Catholic Answers. One of the reasons why he did that was because his Catholic church, he was a lawyer, and his Catholic parish that he went to, you probably know this story, it's a famous story. Patrick Madrid used to be a part of this organization before he came to Relevant Radio. So Carl Keating came out of Mass one day, and he found that a local Protestant congregation, it was actually sort of a fundamentalist church, they had papered all of the cars in the parking lot, put under the windshield wipers a tract basically saying the Catholic Church is from the devil, you can't believe anything it teaches, yada, yada, it's unbiblical, blah, 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 blah. And he just said, this is ridiculous, and I've had it. So he wrote his own little tract, and he called it Catholic Answers, and he put it underneath the windshield wipers of all the cars in that church parking lot after their Sunday service. And so they got mad at him. He said, hey, you know, fair is fair. Turnabout is fair play. Why can't I do it? You did it. I did it. So anyways, that was kind of the start of the organization. But Carl Keating always said that the church fathers are the most dangerous men in Christianity, because when you actually look at what the early church taught, they didn't teach Protestant doctrines. They taught Catholicism. And so we see it in this case. Let's look at what Tertullian says, an early church writer. He says, quote, "Come now, if some philosopher affirms, as does Liberius, following an opinion of Pythagoras." Now, you've heard of Pythagoras, right? Remember the Pythagorean theorem? Did you learn that in school? Yeah, that was always kind of complicated. Well, Pythagoras also thought that reincarnation was true. And here's what Pythagoras said: "That a man may have his origin from a mule, a serpent may have his origin from a woman, and with skill of speech he twists every argument to prove his view." This is Tertullian talking. "Will he not gain an acceptance for it among the pagans and work in some conviction that people should abstain from eating animal food? May anyone have the persuasion that he should abstain lest by chance in his beef he eats some ancestor of his?" Okay, so it's kind of funny. This is hilarious stuff from Tertullian. So he's basically saying Pythagoras, well, the Pythagorean theorem might be cool, but his theorem about reincarnation is way off base. Come on now. So really, you shouldn't be eating anything. You shouldn't have a hamburger because you might be eating your great-great-grandfather here because he's been reincarnated as a cow. Come on. This is ridiculous. And Tertullian basically says, how can people believe this stuff, but they can't believe in the resurrection? They can't believe that a man, and he talks about this guy, I don't know whether it was an actual guy or not, named Gaius. He says, okay, if a Catholic Christian promises the return of a man from a man, the actual Gaius is resurrected again as Gaius, they won't listen to this theory, but they'll listen to reincarnation. How does that make any sense? How is resurrection harder to believe than this? It doesn't make any sense. If you can believe that souls can move to and fro out of human bodies into different bodies, animal bodies, and back again, well, then why can't souls go back into the very body that they left behind? And why can't that body be resurrected? So that's Tertullian. He said that in his apology. He wasn't apologizing for being a Catholic. It means a defense of the faith. He said that in A.D. 197, in apology number 48. Well, let's talk about real quickly this guy Origen, who some people think taught reincarnation, but he didn't. In fact, he was stridently against it. And he talks about the well-known case in the Gospel of Matthew where John the Baptist, people came to John the Baptist and they say, "Hey, are you Elijah? Are you the prophet Elijah?" And John says, "Nope, I'm not. I'm not him." But hang on here. Jesus said also in the Gospel, he says, "Hey, if anyone will listen to this, John the Baptist is Elijah who was to come." Well, hang on here. Why is John the Baptist saying, "I'm not Elijah," but Jesus says he is? Okay. And Origen says, all right, people take these words of Jesus and they say, Jesus taught reincarnation. Maybe John forgot that he used to be the prophet Elijah in a former life. That is not what's going on here. And so Jesus is talking about the spirit and power of Elijah resting on John. This isn't Elijah reincarnated as John. And by the way, don't forget Herod, and Origen talked about this in his writings as well. Herod actually kind of believed in reincarnation because when he heard about Jesus, he thought, oh my gosh, John the Baptist has come back from the dead. He's coming to get me. I had his head chopped off. That was stupid. I shouldn't have given in to my wife. That was ridiculous. Oh, Herodias, oh man, vengeance has come upon me. So he actually thought Jesus was John back from the dead. So he kind of, I guess, believed in reincarnation in a certain sense, but obviously that wasn't the case. Jesus is obviously a different person, a divine person. So Origen talks all about this in his commentary on the Gospel of Matthew, which he wrote in AD 248, way before the Council of Nicaea. So here's an actual quote from Origen. He says, in this place in the gospel, when Jesus said Elijah had come, and he was talking about John the Baptist, it does not appear to me that this is about the doctrine of transmigration. That's another way of saying reincarnation. This is foreign to the church of God. It is not handed down by the apostles. It is nowhere set forth in the scriptures. End of quote. All right, just two more fun one, actually three more real fun little quotes for you. Lactantius, another early church writer writing in AD 317, really close to the Council of Nicaea. He says, hey, talking about Pythagoras. He says, what about Pythagoras? He was first called a philosopher. He thought that souls were immortal, but that they passed into other bodies, cattle, birds, or beasts. Would it not have been better that those souls be destroyed together with their bodies than to be condemned to pass into the bodies of other animals? Would it not be better to not exist at all than, having had the form of a man, to live again as a swine or as a dog? And anyway, so then he talks about this other guy who thought he was, I'm the reincarnation of a guy who fought in the Trojan War. And Pythagoras himself thought he fought in the Trojan War and had become an animal at some point in history and then became himself the philosopher Pythagoras. Okay, that is nonsense. Ambrose of Milan, the great teacher of St. Augustine, he says, quote, it is a cause for wonder that though the pagans, the heathens, say that souls pass and migrate into other bodies, but let those who have not been taught doubt the resurrection. Us who have read the law, the prophets, the apostles, and the gospel, it is not lawful to doubt. Okay, so we can't doubt the resurrection. And that's the bottom line here. The reason why, one of the reasons why reincarnation is impossible is because of the resurrection of the body. God is going to raise our bodies from the sleep of death, reunite them with our eternal souls on the last day. So you will always be you. You're never going to be somebody else. You're never going to come back as an animal or another person. No, reincarnation is not possible. And that's, again, this adds to the drama of life. We talked about that a little bit yesterday, that your choices really matter. This is your one shot. You don't get to come back in another life if you mess it up. So our choices really matter. And again, Ambrose of Milan says the same thing. Why do people believe in this? They find it hard to believe in resurrection, but they believe in this. This is ridiculous. We actually have proof of the resurrection because of the resurrection of Jesus. And I'll just give you one more because it's kind of a funny joke. The early church fathers had a sense of humor. St. Basil the Great, he said, avoid the nonsense of these arrogant philosophers who do not blush to liken their soul to that of a dog, who say that they themselves have formerly been women, shrubs, or a fish. Have they ever been fish? I don't know. But I do not fear to affirm that in their writings, they show less sense than fish. You know, I don't know if they think they've been a fish in a previous life, but man, their brains are about as big as that of a fish, and I can tell that by their writing. So the bottom line is the early church never taught reincarnation. It wasn't thrown out at the Council of Nicaea. It's not something the early Christians believe. There's no evidence of this whatsoever. So, Gary, thank you for that question. A lot of people would have said, oh, this, why is he even asking this? But this is a thing that people say. It's not true. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We will be right back with the coolest story I've ever seen, or at least in the last little while. It's about an 8-year-old boy that's written the most popular book in America. It's so much fun. Be right back. 888-914-9149.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
All right, everybody, let's go. Welcome back to the show. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. We got a couple lines open right now if you want to call in. Lines aren't quite as busy as usual because it's Friday. I guess you're out partying somewhere, but the real party is right here, as producer Lucas likes to say. And here's a great story. This is a fantastic story. We like to bring a lot of good news here. You've heard a lot of bad news already on the radio today, but here's a good news story. This is so much fun. It's about an 8-year-old boy who has written maybe the most popular book in America. This is so cool. And I read about this in the Washington Post, and Kelly Gormley wrote this piece about a second grader named Dylan Helbig, who lives in Boise, Idaho. And he wrote a book called The Adventures of Dylan Helbig's Christmas. And he spelled Christmas C-H-I-S-M-I-S. And it said, The Adventures of Dylan Helbig's Christmas by Dylan His Self. By Dylan His Self. And his mother had given him a notebook, and kind of had this like faux leather notebook. And he right away took this notebook and he started writing his own book. And it's an illustrated book. There's pictures in it and everything. And when he finished it, in the middle of December, he decided, you know, I want to share this with other kids. So he kind of hatched a plan and he waited for the exact right moment to try to put his plan into action. So he went with his grandmother a few days later to the Ada Community Library, the Lake Hazel branch to be exact, in Boise, Idaho. And he had this 81-page book, this little notebook that he had made. And he kind of like was holding it close to his chest. He snuck past the librarians. They didn't know what was going on. His grandmother didn't know what was going on. And little Dylan slipped the book onto one of the stacks, onto a shelf in the children's picture book section. Nobody saw him do it. Here's some audio from KTVB in Boise, Idaho, where they interviewed Dylan after the fact.
The Lake Hazel branch of the Ada County Library is a bastion for books, which is why 8-year-olds like Dylan Helbig...
This is your library?
Yes.
Feel right at home.
Well, not like my library, but I don't own it.
I love that. I love that. It's not my library. I don't own it. But he kind of does now. He pretty much can do whatever he wants there. He's become a local celebrity. So he slips his own book onto the shelf as if it's a library book. And he said later, it was naughty-ish. Was it naughty? Well, it was naughty-ish. But he said the result was actually pretty cool. So he later on confessed to his mother, okay, I got to fess up. This is what I did. I actually left my Christmas adventure book that I wrote on the shelf in the library. Okay, so she said, all right. So they came back. It was like 2 days later. And they went to the spot on the shelves where he had put his book, and it was gone. It was gone. And so his mom went to the librarians, and they said, has anybody found this book? If you have, please don't throw it away. Well, as it turns out, the branch manager of the library, his name was Alex Hartman, he and some of his colleagues had actually found the book, and they didn't want to throw it away. Far from it. They actually loved it. They said, quote, this book was far too special for us to even consider getting rid of it. So all the librarians kind of passed it around. They had all read it. And by the way, the book that Dylan wrote, that Dylan Helbig wrote, is all about a Christmas adventure that started when an exploding star on the top of his Christmas tree catapulted him back through time to the very first Thanksgiving and also to the North Pole. And so the librarians were reading this and they absolutely loved it. And in fact, the manager, Alex Hartman, took the book home and he read it to his 6-year-old son, and his son loved it. He said, this is one of the funniest books I've ever come into contact with. And so they thought this was so great. They thought the book was so good that they decided, you know what? This book actually meets our library selection criteria. It's a high-quality story, and it's fun to read. So the branch manager asked Dylan, hey, could we actually put this in the library? And of course he said yes. So they put a barcode on it, you know, enrolled it in the Dewey Decimal System, I guess he could say, and they added it to the library's collection. And now it resides in the graphic novels section for kids, teens, and adults. And in fact, I say it resides there, but it's never there, because ever since they put it in there, it has been constantly signed out. There is a waiting list for this book that's 5 months long. The library gave little Dylan its first Houdini Award, and it's not spelled like the magician Houdini, but it's spelled like an owl, H-W-O-O, Houdini. You know, it's a reading owl. Okay, you kind of get it. Well, he kind of was like the illusionist Houdini, because he slipped that book in onto the shelves ever so stealthily. And anyway, so he was named by the library as the Houdini Best Young Novelist. So that's super cool. And so this has kind of gone viral, and the story has spread all over the world. In fact, people from out of state, even people from overseas, have asked, can I get on the waiting list to borrow the book? And they said, nope, can't. And it is so unique, because he wrote it, he illustrated it himself with pencil crayons. There's no digital version of this book that people can sign out online. There's a huge wait list, and you can't even renew the book. You just have to give it back when your time's up, but there's a huge wait list, and everybody wants to get their hands on Dylan's book. And good news for all of his fans, he's working on a sequel to his Christmas adventure book, which actually will end, he's kind of spoiling it here, he says the book is going to end with a home visit from the Grinch, and he will get revenge on the Christmas killjoy. His dog Rusty will be in it, and he's also writing another book. Another book about a closet that eats people's jackets. I could see that. I could see that being... Anyway, I'm sure he'll be signed to a major literary agency before long. It's really, really cool. Do you got another clip on that, Lucas? Okay, all right, check this out. This is Dylan.
There was a lot of librarians that I had to get past, so do you know what I did?
What'd you do?
I covered this part and covered the back with my body and just snuck it in. I always be sneaky, like how I get chocolate.
I'd be sneaky like that. I love this guy. So, hey, that was one of the coolest stories that I saw this week. It's about the adventures of Dylan Helbig's Christmas by Dylan himself. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Why don't you call in? We've got to take a little break right now, but we'll be back. 888-914-9149. Give me a call. Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. Call in 888-914-9149. It's the final segment of the day, final segment of the week on the Cale Clark Show. And what a week it was. And that's a great segue because now we're going to play for you, courtesy of producer Lucas Holt, the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. Check it out. Brian, who is calling from somewhat frigid Maine, but spring is coming,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
At some point. Tracy in Mount Laurel, New Jersey.
Hey, John Newman, founder of the Catholic schools, and he's done a lot of good in our world.
Absolutely. And hopefully you're a living American saint as well, Tracy. Hopefully we're all living saints.
I'm
got to be a saint.
Progress, but that's my end result.
Yeah, we're all work in progress, but that's the goal, right? To be canonizable saints. Rose is calling from Wisconsin.
Noah's flood, that maybe it only flooded a very small portion of land rather than the whole earth. And I'm wondering your perspective on those two things.
There are different points of view on that. Some people think that it was a local flood. Like, in other words, it wasn't the whole planet. Some people think it was a total planetary thing. Possible. Again, the question all comes back to, what type of literature is this? Is it meant to be history? Is it meant to be a poetic account? Still, obviously, communicating truth, but in a different way. This guy comes out, and he is just cursing at David. He's throwing stones at David. And I love how one of David's men says to him, can I just cut off this guy's head? Come on, just let me do it. Let me take this guy out. David's like, no, you know what? Maybe there's a message in this for me. Maybe the Lord wants him to do this. Maybe I need to hear this somehow. And so, to me, that's incredible humility on the part of David. I think what it speaks to in terms of leadership is that we can always learn something from our critics. Buster, who is calling from Washington, D.C.
It's a weird scrupulosity I have, and I was just wondering if you could comment on that or if you find it relatable or not.
Yeah, I can. As one great spiritual writer, Jacques Philippe, he says that one of the greatest battles is to not lose your peace and your spiritual equilibrium, even if you've committed to sin, just to ask for forgiveness, keep doing what you did before. Don't stop your prayer life. Don't stop praying the rosary. Keep doing that because the devil wants to throw you off track and say, oh, I'm no good. I'll never amount to anything. And I'm just going to stop my spiritual life. No, don't do that. This really, really cool sort of catechism on confession by Juan de Polanco. And he used to tell it's kind of a guidebook again for priests hearing confessions. He used to tell them, hey, confession can be a school of growth in the spiritual life. It's not just, so if you're, for all the priests out there, it's not just that you're, you know, dispensing absolution here. This is helping that soul, helping that penitent to progress up that spiritual mountain, to get better in their love of God. Hey, welcome back. We've all got to do that, get better in our love of God. And that was from yesterday. That last quote was from yesterday's episode, is there a fear factor when you go to the confessional with apologies to Joe Rogan? That was a fun episode. I enjoyed that, Lucas. And thanks so much for putting that together the week that was. I know it takes a lot of work, but I know it's a lot of fun for you too, right, Lucas?
I was tempted to create the week that wasn't. But, I stuck with the traditional method.
Errors and omissions. I don't think we have that much time. We probably need a whole other hour on the show for that one. But no, thanks for that. That's amazing. And hey, you can call in right now. 888-914-9149. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We're going to go to the phones right now. Harold is calling from Queen Creek, Arizona. Hi, Harold.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Yourself?
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, no problem. No problem. What's on your mind?
I just have a quick question. I always thought, once you're in purgatory, the devil doesn't bother you. But lately, I've been thinking about that question. Does the devil, he always bothers us here alive when we're here because he doesn't want us to go to heaven. And I know once you're in purgatory is your way to go to heaven. But I was wondering, and I know people in purgatory pray for us and we pray for them. But I was wondering if there's other struggles there in purgatory when the devil's bothering us when we're in purgatory.
Oh, that's an interesting question, Harold. That's an interesting question. Can the devil bother us if we're in purgatory? I can honestly say I haven't read anything about that, but off the top of my head, I think the answer would be no. And the reason why I would say that is because everybody who's in purgatory is going to heaven. This isn't a second chance after death where you can still kind of make up your mind and be tempted. Everybody who's in purgatory has died in God's friendship, in a state of grace, but they're imperfectly purified. And they haven't quite reached the sanctity that we need to stand before God, because God can't have sin in his presence. Yeah, the book of Hebrews puts it this way: without holiness, no one will see the Lord. So some of us, we're in God's friendship, but we're not perfectly holy yet. And some people are. Some people are pretty much canonizable saints while they're alive. They've suffered a lot. They've purified themselves. They've allowed God to purify them. And then kind of skip over purgatory like a hurdler, jumping over a barrier. But so I would tend to think that the struggle is not with any kind of exterior tempter or temptation, but rather it's just like letting go. It's letting go. And it's letting go of sinful attachments. Yeah. Anyways, go ahead.
Sorry, I was just thinking, God allows the enemy to bother us here, and he permits that. And sometimes, most of the time, for our own sake, for us to grow in holiness. So I was wondering if he also allows it in purgatory. I know we are, God willing, when you're in purgatory, you are going to heaven. It's just a matter of time. But I was wondering if God will still allow the enemy to bother us there to continue.
Shopping
holiness or not.
Yeah, like I said, Harold, I would think not. I mean, I'm not the magisterium here. I'm not speaking ex cathedra. Somebody emailed me saying, "How dare you speak ex cathedra on that?" I didn't realize I was the Pope. Sorry, but my opinion is that I don't think that would be the case. And so it's a place where God purifies us. We need to allow ourselves to be purified. And again, we have sort of human ways of talking about this. We talk about how much time are you going to spend in purgatory? Well, that guy's going to spend a lot of time in purgatory. Well, there is no time in purgatory because it's in eternity, right? So, but is it maybe a painful process? In some ways painful to the soul. Well, St. Paul says, he talks about people being saved as if through fire. Okay, so yeah, they make it, but everything that they did, some of the work that they did is not going to last into eternity. It's going to be burned up. So I would think not. So I wouldn't worry too much about that, but I'll probably have to go there, so I'll let you know after. But thanks for the call, Harold. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you. God bless you.
You got it. Have a great weekend. That's Harold in Arizona, in sunny Arizona. Okay, we're going to go back to the phones now. We're going to go to Don, who's calling from Wisconsin. Hello, Don.
Hi, Cale. Hey, I was thinking about calling. I did call yesterday right at the end of the show. You gave me a shout out, but in your weekend review, it came up again. And so I thought I'd call in. You did a segment, I think, yesterday about sin and about don't lose your peace. I forgot where did that come from again? Don't lose your peace?
Yeah, there's a great spiritual writer named Jacques Philippe. And he's got so many good little spiritual books. They're really digestible. I think I'm biased, but I think he's the best spiritual writer out there today. And he's got books like, one of them is called Time for God. He's got one on the Little Way of St. Therese. He's got a lot of books. You can look him up. You can look him up on Amazon. Father Jacques Philippe. He's from France. And his name is spelled, I'm writing it out here because I need to write things out. You know how it goes, right? So P-H-I-L-L-I-P, I think it's P-P-E. I think it's two P's there. I could be wrong about that. But anyway, so he's from France. He's a great spiritual writer. And the first book I ever found from him was called Searching for and Maintaining Peace, subtitled A Small Treatise on Peace of Heart. And I talk about this book a lot because I wish I could memorize it because I need that. I need that. I'm sometimes a high anxiety person, so peace of heart is something that I kind of struggle with sometimes. And so he one of the things he said in the book was really fascinating. He said that one of the things that the devil wants to do, one of the biggest victories he can get in your life is to get you to lose your supernatural peace. And what happens to a lot of people is that when they fall into sin, let's say they unfortunately, you know, have the bad fortune of committing a mortal sin, then they kind of throw their hands up and say, and I mentioned this yesterday, I'll never amount to anything, I blew it again, and I'll never be a saint, and they just kind of, they stop praying, they stop doing their normal spiritual duties. And he says, that's exactly what the devil wants you to do. But what you need to do is you need to run right back to God and get up off the canvas and start doing exactly what you did before. You know, get to confession as soon as you can. But he said that actually confuses the devil. He's like, whoa, what's going on? This, it didn't work. It's worked every other time with this guy. Why is it not working now? So just maintaining your peace and that is, he says, oftentimes that is the battle. It's the battle for peace in your heart. So I don't know if that's helpful to you, Don.
And it really, you know, you do get that peace after confession, after a really good confession. That losing your peace, I'll tell you what you just said, you have to get back on the horse, go back to confession. And I think that's exactly what I was calling in about, was the fact that when you stumble and go back, it's like, well, I stumble. Okay. You know, now I'm doing it again, and mm-hmm. you continue. And then like then you lose and you don't do your morning prayers or whatever it is, or as much. And you really got to get back to confession. And I would tell you that I did that for like 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And they were like sometimes really regular, which surprised me. But you also mentioned yesterday, mm-hmm. And I think that really is the devil tempting you. But you go back and you get back in that groove again that you were mm-hmm. when you yep. were, you know, doing your prayers and talking with them and having a relationship with them rather than turning away and mm-hmm. Not practicing as much. And you keep believing, and that grace comes. And I'll tell you, it was a struggle for many years, but pretty much kicked it. So that grace comes.
That's great.
You got to keep believing, though.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a process, right? And I always say that God takes the long view with souls, the extremely long view. Like in the short term, we can have our struggles, and but He is looking way, way, way down the road. You know, there's so many stories like that. I mean, Scott Hahn, you know, I mentioned him earlier in the program, great theologian. He admits this, like he was a juvenile delinquent when he was a teenager. Like he was into all kinds of petty crime and stuff. Like it never, at that point, would anybody have said, oh, this guy's going to be like one of the great Catholic writers and theologians? No, or somebody like St. Augustine, who, you know, was into all kinds of nutty stuff. He had joined a cult, fathered a kid out of wedlock. He was the furthest thing from a saint possible at that point. And that's why so many people can identify with his story in the confessions. It's so real. Like this is what people are going through every single day. So I think it's really important to take that long view, that God never gives up on a soul.
Absolutely. One other thing I would say, you know, as you go struggle through that, and I think we all have those repetitive sins, mm-hmm. but then you get the, well, you know, I'm broken, I'm human, I'm fallible,
yeah.
I'm a sinner. And we all are. But sometimes we use that as a crutch.
Yeah.
And if we tried a little bit harder, we could stay away from it for longer periods of time. Right? So yeah, I think that too.
Yeah, I think sometimes people want to make peace with their sins, and where they say, well, that's this one thing that I'll never conquer. Everything else I'll try to be, you know. But I just gotta, you know, I'll never get over this one thing, or this is the one area that I'm gonna kind of keep to myself, and I'll, you know, this is my little cheat or whatever. No. You can never do that. You can never lower the bar. And God doesn't grade on a curve, right? The measuring stick is his son, Jesus Christ. And so we have to believe that he can actually make us saints. And at the end of the day, St. Jose Maria used to say this all the time. The real question is, do you want to do it? Do you want to become a saint? Because if you want to, it's going to happen. God can do it. And he used to say, I will become a saint. I will become a saint. And that might sound arrogant, but he's not trusting in himself. He did become a saint. He was trusting in God's ability to make it happen. And he just, it's more putting yourself at God's disposal and allowing him to do it, like through your various spiritual practices, including confession, prayer, and allowing yourself to kind of get into God's orbit, where he will over time fashion you into the sculpted image of Christ, you know. And I certainly need that. I need to sculpt myself a little better, I'll tell you, on the outside and on the inside, Don. So, hey, man, I appreciate you. That was a great question. I'm glad you called back. I'm glad we got you in there, because there's a few people that didn't make it yesterday, so I'm glad you came back.
All right. Well, very good talking, Cale. And, you know, when you get that peace back, I think it really is, you get that peace, you get in tune, right?
Yeah.
I would say, you know, you were just talking about being a saint. I remember I remember a time when I said, it's not like, I don't want to be a saint. I don't accept, you know, identify myself that. I'm just, you know, I want to be a good guy, but have fun and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, that's what saints do.
Mm-hmm. You know? That's right.
And when you try to practice that quite a bit, I don't know if you get holier, but you seem to get closer and have really nice things happen for you too. So,
yeah, I think that's really true. Yeah. A lot of people want to say, well, you know, I don't want to be a canonizable saint. I don't want my own stained glass window. I just kind of want to get into heaven by the skin of my teeth. Well, if that's your goal, what happens if you miss, right? Like, you set the bar higher. Like, try to be an absolute Hall of Fame saint, you know, and that's the thing. And C.S. Lewis always said, if you aim for heaven, earth gets thrown in as a bonus. You're not going to be a boring person. You're not going to be... you know, somebody that you can't really, you're going to be more yourself than you ever were, the best version of yourself when you get in touch with God. It's kind of the masterpiece. It's like the Sistine Chapel. A few years ago, they washed off all the grime on the Michelangelo paintings on the dome of the Sistine Chapel. And wow, people saw the original colors. That's what it's like. It's becoming what God originally intended for you. When he created you uniquely, gave you your eternal soul in your mother's womb at the moment of your conception, like, wow, this is a masterpiece that I had in mind. That's what it's all about, and I like that. So
when
Don,
you get there, that peace that you talked about, you get that peace, and quite often along with that is a joy. And it's kind of interesting when you stray again, that goes away.
Yeah.
So it's kind of getting it right. So anyway.
There you go.
Thanks,
Don, Cale. I appreciate you, man. Have a great weekend. That was Don calling from Wisconsin. We're going to go now to Helen, who's calling from California. Hello, Helen.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
I sure can. What's your question?
Oh, okay. I was calling in to make a comment that the previous caller was asking about, does Satan bother people in purgatory?
Right.
To me is that Satan wouldn't be wasting his time there because they're already on their way to heaven, and he's going to be busy attacking the rest of us who are still working out our salvation in fear and trembling.
Yeah. That Helen, that's a great point. Yeah, I mean, he does have preternatural intelligence. He's not as powerful as God, not even close. It's not like Star Wars where there's a dark side of the Force and it's equal power to God. No. You know, compared to God, he's a gnat, but he's still extremely powerful. He's a fallen angel, preternatural intelligence, but he's no match for God. And certainly he is smart enough to know he's not going to waste his time with people who are already guaranteed to go to heaven. So I think that's a great logical point, Helen. I appreciate you. Thanks for the call. That was Helen calling from California. And we're going to try to squeeze in one more call here. Daniel is calling from Sacramento. Hey, Daniel.
Hi, Cale. Thank you for all the work you do. It's a great
welcome.
Show. Learn a lot.
We got about a minute here, so let's just a quick question,
Saint Thomas, Saint Thomas Aquinas, Summa Theologica, teaches that the fires of purgatory are the same as the fires of hell. You can leave them in the lives of the saints. It is those who are in the lowest part of purgatory can be tormented by demons. So it's not...
Okay, interesting.
You can do research. It's in the lives of the saints, and there's been books on it. There's a lot of books. There's books.
Okay, thanks, Daniel. I got to jump in. Thanks for that. I'll definitely look into that. And it's interesting because the producer Lucas had looked this up as well. And there was a priest who he had looked up who wrote on this, Father Edward McElmail, and he actually said that that wasn't the case, that the pains of purgatory are purifying fire, totally different than the fires of hell, and they can't be tempted or tormented by the devil, souls in purgatory. So, we've opened up a can of worms here, I think, on the Cale Clark Show. Something to think about over the weekend. But, hey, thanks, everybody, for hanging with me all this week, and as always, you do on Relevant Radio. And don't forget, you can always share the podcast of the show and also the Faith Explained show through relevantradio.com or through the app. Got to get out. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless you. Lucas Holt produced. Patrick Alok took your calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.